Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. My guest is the beloved Sandra Cisneros. Her book is called Martita, I Remember You. It's a bilingual edition, Martita, Te Recuerdo. And it's a lovely, lovely book published by Vintage. And if you can, as I believe you should, read it in English and Spanish. Why not alternate paragraph by paragraph and teach yourself a little bit more Spanish? No matter how much you already know, you can always learn more. And I'm going to ask Sandra Cisneros, who's been a guest since the early days of the show. We've spoken about many, many things, including her brilliant memory of sitting on the staircase as her mother, who was a house cleaner, and she remembered the smells of the ammonia and the household solvents, because the subject of the show at that period was memory. And she said that her strongest memory was smell. Yes, I remember that when my grandma, who lived with us, would clean, I would remember as a child the smell of the cleansers. I'm going to ask Sandra to read the first paragraph of Martita, I Remember You in English and then in Spanish.
Well, thank you, Michael. Thank you for introducing me with the memories of smell and the hallways of my youth. My mom was a house cleaner only to clean our house. But this is a very nice request to read this in English and Spanish, and I'll tell you why. Because when I was writing the story, Martita, the character that the title is based on, Martita, te recuerdo, Martita, I remember you, you know, she speaks Spanish. And so in my mind, when I'm writing, she's speaking to me in Spanish. So it makes sense to read it in English and Spanish. I just did the audio for both the English and the Spanish this time, which will be released at the same time as the book. Most Saturdays, you can find me in the dining room with my scraper and blowtorch. Once the kitchen is clean and the girls are at the library. In 88 BC, Mithridates, king of Pontus under Euxene, was at war with Rome. Xenophon. Things bubble up from I don't know where inside me, like the sticky layers of varnish I'm attacking with the propane torch. And I will flip the book over and read that same paragraph in Spanish. And it goes like this. Casi todos los sábados me puedes encontrar en el comedor con mi espátula y mi soplete, una vez que la cocina está limpia y las niñas están en la biblioteca. En 88 antes Cristo, Mitriades, el rey del Ponto Euxino, estaba en guerra con Roma. Jenofonte, las cosas borbotean de no sé qué lugar dentro de mí, como las pegajosas capas de barniz que ataco con el soplete. This story begins with a character, you know, scraping varnish off a hutch and thinking. So I tried to do the quiet interior voice after watching Derek Jacobi do I, Claudius. And I thought, that's what I want to sound like, Derek Jacobi.
It's beautiful. I think that you have many voices, Sandra Cisneros. The character decides that she doesn't want to paint the wood yet again, that she's going to scrape it and then scrape the varnish off, and it comes off in layers. And I think the metaphor for this book, Martita, I Remember You, is of varnish coming off in layers, the things that memory has covered over or made prettier or completely occluded. These are arriving when the character Corina is scraping and using the propane torch, and she finds a letter from her old friend Martita. This is from a part of her life when Corina, like many of us who ever wanted to be writers, escaped her family in Chicago and went to Paris. And there she meets two people who are to become her friends, and they are Martita and Paola. And they are writing partners for many years, but now Corina remembers that one of her first adventures was in a department store, where it turned out that Paola, who was not without money, had a hobby, and that was shoplifting. And she shoplifted 3 pairs of woolen gloves. All 3 of them are dragged to the basement. Paola has photos taken at a subway photo booth, and these are yet another layer. Martita can look at the 3 of them. They're young, they're sticking out their tongues, they're making funny pig noses, but there they are. These many years later, they are now on different continents, out of touch with one another, capable of making the connection through memory. A letter is found that might be 10 or 15 years old, and it occasions the scraping and propane that causes the narrator to write this book, which is in the form of a letter to Martita.
Never mails. It's just spoken out loud, the way sometimes we think about people from our past and we talk to them, but we never get around to actually communicating directly. It's all in her imagination and her mind, that interior monologue.
Now tell me, did this book awaken your own past?
Yes. You know, actually, I started it as a short story back in the late 80s and early 90s. It was supposed to be part of a collection called Woman Hollering Creek, but it didn't fit in thematically, and it didn't fit in because I couldn't finish it at that time. You know, in my early 90s, I was I was half my age. You know, I'm 66 now. So I was trying to finish the story, and I wasn't old enough to finish it. Because we really can't see ourselves when an event happens with any clarity until a couple of decades have gone past. So this began from an autobiographical memory, but then it went off into became its own thing. You know, some parts of it are true, but all of the characters are telescoped from real people into 3 as opposed to 9. Now, there were many women I met when I was traveling on my first NEA grant. I had finished House on Mongo Street on an island in Greece, and I had a Urea pass, and I was just traveling. And I was traveling because I was afraid to travel, and I wanted to know how it was to travel alone. I have to say that Corina began as a part of me, but then she took off and started saying things about herself that never happened to me. So I was a little bit surprised. And, you know, you have to, as the writer, let the character say what they want to say and go where they want to go. But I would have to say, you know, all the 3 women are based on different people, and all the 3 women are parts of me as well.
Yes, I'm talking to Sandra Cisneros. Her new book is a short book. It's called Martita, I Remember You. I felt, as I read, that this book was in fact vast. It was making references to parts of our life that a different writer may have spent hundreds of pages on, and you manage to conflate the book into a very readable, maybe 50 pages. And the book is particularly beautiful because when you turn it upside down, whether you've been reading it in English, you turn it upside down and read Martita te recuerdo en español, in Spanish. The book itself resembles the layers that you're talking about. Now, you mentioned that there is a translator.
Yes, I'm a beautiful translator who's worked with me forever, you know, for half my life, since we started working together when I started getting published at in New York Publishing House, I believe. And that's Liliana Valenzuela, who's a poet and a short story writer herself. So she and I have met in Austin when I lived in Austin, Texas, and we've worked together as friends, as collaborators for a very long time, you know, more than 30 years. We're still working together. Yeah, it's a great translation. If you know both languages, you'll see that she did a wonderful job.
Did she translate this from English into Spanish or from Spanish into English?
No, from English into Spanish. She's a Mexican national who emigrated to Texas, which went to school at UT Austin and wound up staying there and marrying and having a family. So she, her Spanish is impeccable. That's her first language. And she translates from my English into a beautiful Spanish. I'm always pleased with the work Liliana Valenzuela does. You know, we're now working on the next book, which is a book of poetry.
Tell me about your Spanish, Sandra. How is your Spanish?
It's never been perfect. I make a lot of mistakes with, you know, the articles and not using the right gender. And sometimes I make funny mistakes because words sound the same to me. And I mix up like, you know, like eagle. And, you know, I'll mix up eagle and hígado, which is liver and figs. You know, that's funny when you mix them up. But it's great, too, because I learn also from my mistakes. I amuse people. But I'm understood. I can defend myself, as we say. I can defend myself in Spanish, but I still read in English, and then I'll read in Spanish slowly after I've read the English version. I'm a very slow reader, and my Spanish is more spoken rather than a written Spanish. So I cannot, although I'm starting to write poetry in Spanish. However, I always need my translator to proof it and correct it because I make all kinds of mistakes.
When I was in junior high school, as it used to be called, I suspect it's now called middle school, we started to study languages. And most of my smart friends studied French, but because my mom had studied Spanish, and she was always helping me with my schoolwork, I studied Spanish. All of the so-called brilliant students were studying French because they could read Camus, which they did, and Sartre. And when I began to study Spanish, we read a vast book called La Barraca, The Cabin. I think it may have been by Blasco Ibáñez, but in the course of reading it, I learned more about drainage ditches than most people would ever want to know. And my Spanish included phrases like tísticos colchones, dilapidated mattresses. But we got the last laugh because before you knew it, French literature had gone for a dive, while Spanish literature, particularly La Literatura de Sudamerica, the literature of South America, entered the world first through Borges, but then the big deal for me was 100 Years of Solitude came out. I read it in English, and I went and got El Otoño del Patriarca in Spanish.
Wow,
now, this is a book in very long sentences and vast paragraphs, and I had to read it. I won't pretend. I read it with the dictionary at my side, but oh, I felt so proud to read Marquez in Spanish.
Because you get a real sense of the music and the flavor of the language in its original, no?
I could get Spanish editions of Cortázar, of Carlos Fuentes, of so many writers, the world's important writers, suddenly were writing in Spanish. The pleasure of knowing that eventually, in our globe, every language will come to its prominence, and there will be people who've learned Japanese and Chinese who will be able to tell us about the great literature that we tend only to read in translation. Now, I've been reading Sandra Cisneros, my guest, since the very beginning, and as I remember, you wrote The House on Mango Street for your students, yes?
I started it in graduate school, but it changed and became a novel when I was a high school teacher to students who had dropped out and were returning. So yeah, I wrote it. They influenced and shaped and changed my book. And I wrote it for them and finished it when I was 28 and got published when I was 30.
When I read it, my mother, who used to like to read books with me, read it with me, and she loved it for quite a few years. When my mother would talk about her favorite writers, she would speak of Sandra Cisneros.
How sweet and kind.
What I loved in reading your new book, Martita, I Remember You, is that your voice has changed. The grammar of the sentences are there to encounter the past in the present. And the narrator is scraping the table down to its original wood to try and get through the layers and encounter the original as we, as readers, are encountering the originals of these lost characters. Yes?
Yes. And I think the nice thing about the size of this story is you can sit down and read it in one sitting, or you can listen to me read it for you on the audio. And it's about an hour and a half to hear it out loud. And maybe a little, if you're a speed reader, maybe an hour to finish to read it. I would like the readers to read it in one sitting, because I think of it as like a performance piece. I think it would work really well if people could read it from start to finish in one sitting.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to KCRW's Bookworm. I'm talking to the beloved Sandra Cisneros. I say that without sarcasm. Sandra Cisneros has been one of my guests on Bookworm, going all the way back 30 years or more to our beginnings. We're talking about her new book, Martita, Te Recuerdo. Martita, I Remember You. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Sandra Cisneros about her new book, Martita, Te Recuerdo, Martita, I Remember You, in which a long-forgotten letter sets off a charged encounter with the past. Sandra, you now live in Mexico. Tell me, do you feel, although I believe you were born in the United States in Chicago, do you believe that you're living in the past of your ancestors?
Yeah, I absolutely am. I made the treks south, unlike my ancestors who fled during the Mexican Revolution and, you know, went during the violence of the Mexican Revolution, fled from the countryside 100 kilometers from where I now live, and were never able to come back. And 100 years later, I moved back for them. So I do feel a great resonance. And I also understand the life of the immigrants better now that I've moved here. I understand my father's life better. He also emigrated from Mexico, but he was a city person. And he was educated and moved to Chicago. So I think those experiences as an immigrant to a new environment resonate in the new book that I've written in Martita Te Recuerdo and Martita I Remember You, because I'm writing about immigrants too. But I'm writing about those immigrants in Paris who are living in Paris, maybe for political reasons, or maybe out of economic choices, or maybe they're dreamers looking to change their life. There are lots of characters that come in and out of this story. And it's not the glamorous Paris, though, of the movies or of the Paris that you might imagine that a writer would discover. It's really kind of the down and out people living in the underbelly of Paris. And I think it's as relevant now as the time that I'm writing about. I'm writing about the 80s Paris, but I think it's even more relevant now when we think of Paris and all the racial conflicts that have happened in the last 20 years. It was certainly true when I was visiting Paris for the first time in the 80s.
Whereas, as you say, many immigrants to our country came impoverished to work on the railroad. In this generation, in Martita, I remember you, one of them is going to hope to teach herself to be a writer. Another has in mind becoming a fashion model. Two of them work in a tanning salon, but they claim that they've gotten their color from going skiing because they want people to think they're rich. Now, how many still of us pretend to be richer than we are because we fear being poor will classify us and leave us without our dreams? I live in a city, Los Angeles, where it has been determined that more than half of the population is Latino y Latina. And I think it's time once again to find a way to have this become the bilingual city, just as I think that America should be filled with bilingual cities. It doesn't matter what the two languages are. It does matter that there be two, and that we understand that no ethnicity is a dominant ethnicity except for an unwary period of time. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it'd be great if we were as multilingual as other countries, for one thing. I think the more languages one knows, the more you know yourself. And just like the more you travel, the more you realize what your native country is and what who you are in it. So not even bilingual, I would say at this time in the history of the universe, it's time to be multilingual, don't you think? And, you know, I love the idea of learning new languages. I wish I knew some of the indigenous languages of the region that I live in. And I'm very fascinated by how those languages affect the Spanish that I speak. Because even though some languages disappear, their sensibility, their way of looking at the world, their syntax remains in the conquered language. So that's fascinating for me as a writer.
Of course. And not only that, but in the last several years, I've had on the show some indigenous poets who read the poetry both in their indigenous language and in English. And many of the people who wrote in or called said that they had never heard those indigenous languages before, not heard them anywhere. And it was very interesting to me how much you and I and everyone, we are responsible for rescuing the history of our cultures, our own cultures, our neighbors' cultures, the cultures of people who live down the road from us. We are responsible, just as we are responsible to help our homeless people, and we are responsible to help people who need help. One of the main reasons I regard literature so highly is that it teaches us where we come from, who we are, and what we have to do to maintain that. One of the things that I love about you, your works, except for one, are mostly very short, and they appear periodically. You're not a writer who has a book every year. Tell me about your rate of composition.
Well, I don't know. You're the one that can tell me better than I can. I just put my head down and whatever I have in front of me, that's what I'm working on. But I'm also, you know, I also do other things besides write. You know, I organize writers' workshop through Macondo, the writing foundation that I had founded. And I started a fellowship for writers in Texas. And I organized the Latino MacArthur winner. So I've done a lot of other things besides writing, but it's all, to me, a parallel work. And if I haven't been writing things every year, like people want me to, it's because I'm doing a lot of organizing. And I don't regret that work either. It's really important for me to do that work as well, especially when we have administrations that are antagonistic to my community and to the issues I care about. So yeah, you know, I've been doing lots of other things that I'm very proud of, just as proud of as the writing, but I'm always writing. I'm just a slow, I write poetry and I write essays, and sometimes I'm drawing and sometimes I'm working on prose and sometimes I'm working on other things. So I'm always creating. I need that.
I have to tell you, if you'll give me permission to, that I love you, that I've known you for a very long time. And every time I see you, my spirits are lifted. I've been talking with Sandra Cisneros. She's the author, most recently, of Martita, Te Recuerdo, Martita, I Remember You, published in a dual language edition by Vintage. Thank you, Sandra, again for joining me.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to visit with you. And I look forward when we can see each other once again and not just do this by Zoom.
Yes, we have to make sure that happens. I want to tell my listeners that due to the pandemic, we are each taping remotely, so you may hear unusual sounds. You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also available at all podcast services. This is global and on demand with KCRW smartphone apps. If you haven't already, please don't spend time thinking about it. Call and become a member of KCRW. Why? Because we need you. And I would like to think that at the end of this pandemic time, Bookworm will be one of the shows that attracted the most listeners, because we will be praised for it and loved for it, and we need it. Special thanks to my dear Bookworm Show collaborators, Alan Howard and Sean Sullivan, and engineer PJ Shahamat. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mail of Sparks.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.